Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
So I've got Amy on the line. Amy, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about what healthy sexuality looks like when a sex addict is in recovery.
One of the things we know about research and sex addicts is that they don't necessarily want sex with their own wife. And so to me, that says he's in really good recovery because he does want that with you. He has been 2 years sober. He has been in 3 facilities. And I suspect that's how he's wanting closeness with you.
That is right. That is how he is probably wanting closeness with her. And I happen to know that couple, and I know that to be true for sure. And the reason I say that is that when a man is in healthy recovery, you know, he wants to utilize all the conceivable ways to get closer to his wife. And we know that, I'm not going to stereotype, but I am going to say it's more likely that a man wants to make apologies by having sex. A man wants to find closeness by having sex. And so if you're working with a good partner-sensitive therapist, you're probably going to see that therapist recommend some couples group, a couples work. And that couples work can focus on how do you rebuild the attachment that was broken. Now, I've got a lot of clients that say, I don't ever think we really had good attachment. So it may be building it for the first time. But the important thing is that together, the two of you talk about what your needs are. And you've heard me say it before, at the beginning of recovery, it is so important that the partner-sensitive therapist finds ways to make and to ensure that the spouse feel safe, because they won't be able to do any work towards rebuilding a relationship until she feels safe. And that's going to take a while. There is just no doubt about it that safety and stabilization part of the relationship may take anywhere from 1 to 3 years. But when a man's in good recovery and he's working on his own individual skills and his relational skills, they can begin doing early couples recovery work and then couples therapy, usually after the first year of good recovery. And she may be in the driver's seat because that's part of the living amends that he has procured to make sure she feels safe. But then the couple begins to work on compromise and negotiation, and they talk about what they need, and they figure out ways of working towards that. That's very, very, very important. Now, she may have trouble doing that until a lot of her grief has been processed. Speaking of grief, wow, we are going to be talking about grief today. I have on a client. I'm sorry, not a client. She's actually a listener. And she had asked me several years ago through my other podcast if I would consider helping her write a book. She wanted to write a book about her life story, the many betrayals she had experienced with her husband, and I could maybe explain it from a clinical point of view, and she could explain it from the personal partner trauma place. And I said, yeah, let's go ahead and get that started. And so she would send me a chapter, and I would help to explain from a clinical perspective why she had the feelings, thoughts, and beliefs that she did. And she would, you know, talk about her journey. Well, since that point, she has decided to change to some degree the way she is doing this. She's writing a memoir. It's very much in a diary journal form. And she also had experienced, some discovery information that no one wants to hear under any circumstances. I say it's the worst of the worst of the worst. And that was that her husband was having an affair with his adult child, their adult child, her adult daughter, and impregnated her. Reminds me very much of a show Oprah did that I actually happened to be a guest on. Now, I'd love to tell you that they used me as an expert. They did not. The story goes that my sister-in-law really wanted to see Oprah and said, if I get tickets, will you go? And I said, well, yeah, tickets are hard for Oprah. This is when she was doing her weekly or daily show. Well, we got tickets, and if anybody's ever been to the studio, there's almost a comic that comes on and warms the group up and gives some protocol and procedure and explains to the audience what they need. And he said, you know, I don't feel like I can really be too lighthearted here because today is a very serious show. He said, the show is about sexual abuse, and I'm wondering, do we have anybody in the listening audience, in the audience that knows anything about sex abuse? Well, I raised my hand because I had coordinated a program for an entire county. I've seen all the victim survivors, and I had seen all the perpetrators because this was family sexual abuse, and I had seen the family members, and it was about keeping the families together. If we established healthy boundaries and assertiveness, could the families stay together? That was the course of the program that I was servicing. Okay, so I raise my hand. I say, yeah, as a matter of fact, I work with perpetrators. I work with their family members, and I work with survivors. And he goes, wow, that's great. Would you be willing to sit out in the aisle? If we move a chair in the aisle, would you be willing to do that? And I said, sure. And I thought, this is phenomenal. I am going to be a guest on Oprah. It may be informal. I may have been in the audience. They may not have called me and asked for my expertise, but this is phenomenal. He then asked, were there any other experts in the audience? And nobody raised their hand. And I said, oh, my gosh, this is even better than phenomenal. I don't have any competition here. This is crazy great. I have always loved to be on TV. If you go to my website, CarolTheCoach.com, you'll see that there's probably 50 segments that I've done on for the news and on different topics. I just love it. So they put me out in the aisle. My sister-in-law was very mad. She's like, I wanted you to be sitting right there and with me. And all of a sudden they rip you out and put you on the aisle, and I'm sitting by myself and next to a stranger, because they moved one of the women on the aisle out. Okay, so this show was not just about sexual abuse, as if that wouldn't have been a hard enough topic. And what I know about this topic is that it happens reportedly to one out of every three females. So my listening audience today has likely been through sexual abuse, and I really just want you to take care of yourselves as I tell this story and as you listen to my guest today, because not only have you experienced partner betrayal, but at least one out of every three
females, and we know it's higher, this is only reported cases, has experienced sexual abuse. So the story was, this was children, teenagers, and young adults who had been sexually abused by their fathers and had become impregnated. They had been pregnant. They had become pregnant with their father's child. Well, that was a little bit different because that had only happened to one of my cases in 6 years, so I was not so much an expert. The truth of the matter is that they've never asked me anything. They never used me as being an expert at all. As a matter of fact, the survivors had so much to say that they really could not get much in otherwise. You know, Oprah is the master of being able to interview, but this was such a raw topic and it was so sensitive that she really gave them their opportunity to talk. And I so appreciated that. Now, I was featured on that show almost every break. At the time of, you know, before they would break, they would do a panning of the audience. And because I was right there in the middle of the aisle, they would always get me. And so I had lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of people that said, oh my gosh, I saw you on Oprah. Wow. You know, but I didn't get to speak. And it saddened me. It broke my heart that these women were talking about how betrayed they had been. And you all are probably getting to know me fairly well, and you know many of my opinions. And one of the things that I say repeatedly is that partner betrayal is worse than sexual abuse. They're both terrible. But my experience with sexual abuse survivors is that they are not as scarred or as traumatized as partners that have been betrayed. They have more resiliency. I do believe that it's because they didn't know what was happening to them. There was very little explanation. I mean, they just, when you're married to somebody and he or she betrays you, that's a covenant that you really thought you could depend on. You're supposed to be able to depend on your spouse. And so it really creates more trauma and certainly more drama than a child who's not sure what's happening to him or her. And sometimes is fearful beyond belief, but other times may even feel like that's the only time mom or dad is paying attention to him or her. So there are lots of mixed feelings with sexual abuse, not so much with partner betrayal. So today we're going to be talking with a listener about what that was like for her. And she's going to be talking about what she wished she had done differently, what she knows now that she didn't know then, what were her primary feelings, and what were the steps she took when she discovered this information? And how are things now? You know, think about this. Her grandson or granddaughter, because I can't remember the sex of the child, is her husband and daughter's child. That poor grandchild. Wow. So please take care of yourself for this show. If you need to walk away, you know you can always listen to it again by subscribing for free on iTunes, Betrayal Recovery Radio. And I want to say, you know, if you didn't know that I did another podcast, my Sex Help with Carol the Coach podcast through Blog Talk is another podcast that I started maybe 6 or 7 years ago. There were over 500 episodes. So
I encourage you, you know, to educate yourself to the best of your ability. And here's what I know to be true. You do educate yourselves. I have never met a group of people that did more reading, that did more podcasts, that did more YouTubes, that did more workshops than women and men who've experienced partner betrayal. That's the wonderful thing about you, is that this so does not make sense. And so, of course, you're doing your every loving best to find out what is the deal. Right? I know it. And so, I really appreciate the fact that you do spend time with us. APSATS works diligently to train clinicians and coaches on partner sensitivity. And we're going to have our new president on at the end of the month, and we're going to be talking about some approaches that we use to help you feel safe, she and I. And so we just really believe that it's important to get this information to the community and to you. Why do we do that? Because we want you to have all the information possible. That's what we do through APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists. That's what APSAT stands for.
Carol Jurgensen Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, is available to coach you through the trauma that you're experiencing as a result of being a partner of a sex addict. She is a certified clinical partner specialist trained by APSAT, the Association of Partners of Sexual Addict Trauma Specialists, to help you navigate through the trauma. APSAS is the only organization designated to help partners and their spouses find safety in an unsafe situation. She will also coach you and your spouse to set up healthy communication, empathy, and boundaries that will create safety and stabilization after discovery. Carol is a certified sexual addiction specialist, so she can work with your spouse to create the tools to assist him in finding true recovery. She uses Zoom to provide the necessary consultation to get you through this crisis. For more information, go to her website, www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com, or email her directly at carol@carolthecoach.com.
Thank you very much. We have been having technical difficulty, so I am seeing if I can get our guests on the line. You know, that happens sometimes. So that's why I decided I'd go ahead and play, if you will, a commercial for APSATS as well as for me. I really think it's helpful to understand what APSATS can do. And if you would, I would love for you to go to our website. That's APSATS.org, and allow yourself an opportunity to really get to know the providers in your area by just putting in the city and then finding out who's available for you as a clinician or a coach. So that we make it as easy as possible to make that happen. And I really hope that you can get a specialist that understands your pain. Because if you don't have a specialist that understands your pain, you won't be able to get the expedient help that you need. And that is never good when you're fumbling around with a therapist that wants to be helpful but doesn't really know how to help. That just doesn't work when you're dealing with such devastation. And so really, one of the things that I can't stress enough is that you work with somebody who gets it, who understands partner betrayal, and who wants so desperately to help you. That's what I know to be true. And I just have to say that, you know, there was all sorts of people that really are available. I mean, we have people that they have been working in this field for 10 years. They are experts. They know what they know, and they want to work that out. I mean, they've been trained. They've gone to trauma workshops. They are people that you would want to work with, that you can trust. And that is so important because, let's face it, if you can't trust your counselor, your coach, to know what's going on, you're not going to break down the walls that you need to break down to do the intense, deep work that you need to do. Wouldn't you agree? It's hard, hard, hard stuff, and yet truly you can do that by getting with the right person who's going to make a difference, get you help, and be the support system that you deserve. I'm a big believer in support. I mean, we need that. We need to be able to access support and get one's needs met. You know, one of the things that I say in my book, Help Her Heal, I say, what are your spouse's needs? What does she need to feel safe? What can she do? You know, what's going on? And so I have him list a series of needs, physical, emotional, spiritual. And then I call them recovery needs. What does she need you to do so that she knows you're in good recovery? And that really makes a difference. When he can know what your needs are, then he's much more likely to be able to fulfill them. And men aren't very good at this anyway, let alone men that have been self-absorbed or selfish or self-interested in their addiction. I'm not sure if I'm speaking of your husband. Maybe your husband was the kindest, most giving, loving, need-meeting man that ever lived. And that's why it's so hard to believe that all these things are going on. But more than likely, you noticed some detachment. You saw what it was like. You recognized that you two were more distant and disconnected. And you tried to work on it. You did your very best, and nothing seemed to work. Because until an addict is willing to get the work, do the work, get to the work, it's probably not going to happen. You know, there has to be a willingness and a readiness in him. And that in and of itself is quite the task, because you all know that an addict is in denial. They really think that what they're doing isn't hurting anybody because it's done in secret. They forget that it's a broken vow. They forget that it's a trust that hasn't been honored. You know, when we work with Patrick Carnes, he has us look at the many excuses that men use to legitimize their addiction. And there are there are so many excuses. And wow, that in of itself seems so hurtful, seems so painful. I'm sure there's a part of you that says, my goodness, they were fooling themselves. And actually, yes, they were fooling themselves. So one of the things we ask them to do is we ask them to come up with the excuses that they told themselves. You know, excuses that legitimized in their own mind what they were doing. And you heard me use one earlier. What she doesn't know won't hurt her. You know, that is always a tough situation because they are lying to themselves and believing, if you will, that if you don't know, then what's the big deal if they go to a massage parlor? Or what's the big deal if they didn't bring home an STD, it didn't hurt you, or it's just sex. I love her. I'm not emotionally involved. Or if you are having sexual problems, oh, this will make our relationship better. This way I won't be bothering her so much. And wow, those are the kinds of things that you go, oh my gosh, I can't even believe that he would say that this would not hurt me. This has rocked me to my core. Oftentimes, when you're dealing with an addict, their denial is so great. You know, they will say to themselves, well, I only did that once. Or I needed to get my needs met somewhere. Or, well, she looked at pornography with me. I don't know why she's so upset. Or if you think I'm so bad, you need to come to my group. There are guys that have done way more than I've done. And I know that you may not hear those things. They may be smart enough not to share them with you, but they definitely admit as they're working through their recovery that they are all things that they said to themselves. Again, I use that word to legitimize what was going on. And so we really help them to get through denial. And sometimes their denial comes back. And so they'll be in good recovery. And then they'll say, well, you know, you'll be talking to them and they will have agreed that they have to let you know about a slip, an infraction, a temptation, a trigger. And maybe you've given them I want to know about those things within 4 hours, 8 hours, a day, whatever. And so then they come in and they're talking about it. And I say, oh, so how'd your wife feel? And they'll say, well, I didn't tell my wife. And I'll say, why? And they'll say, well, because it would hurt her. And I say, but you have a contract to make her feel safe. And this is what she's asked you to do. Oh, no, it would just bother her. And then she'd get all worried, and she'd think I wasn't in recovery. And so I say at that point, oh, my gosh, it's imperative that you become a man of your word. And if you would lie by omission because you don't want to hurt her, she's never going to believe, ever, that this relationship can be open and honest. And what I know to be true is that more oftentimes than not, he agrees. He says, you know what, you're right. I just didn't want to go through the pain of causing her more pain. I am such a screw up. I am so sad that I fooled myself again into believing that I could control this. So, it's so important, just really imperative, that you figure out a way to recognize when he's being honest. You know, if you've got a good polygrapher, doing two polygraphs a year is a nice way of reassuring yourself that he's telling you the truth. What I know is that oftentimes women spend so much time checking in with their husbands about their behaviors that they kind of torment and torture themselves. And that is never good. The last thing we want you to do is think about it more than he does. I've got this rule of thumb as a counselor, and I always say to myself, I am not going to work harder than my clients. And unfortunately, in partner betrayal, partners oftentimes work harder than their clients. And that can be a real problem, because then that means you're the one who's got it on your brain. It's occupying your brain rent-free. It's causing racing thoughts, more trauma, extra anxiety, sadness, fear. And so one of the things we talk about when working with our partners is, hey, what can you do to stay calm? You know, I met a man, and he said that when he experienced urges and cravings, he couldn't get himself to call somebody in the fellowship, but he found an effective tool, and that was to say over and over and over again, Jesus, 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 Jesus. And he'd say it about 50 times, and by the end of that time, it connected him to his higher power, and it stopped the urge or the craving to act out. Now, that's what Patrick Carnes says, too. He says, you know, the old adage, this too shall pass, is really true. And if somebody has an urge to look at women in bathing suits, or if somebody has an urge to stop by the massage parlor, if you can find things to interrupt that thought, the urge and the craving will disappear. This too shall pass. And what I know is that partners need to find things to calm themselves down too. You know, maybe that's that you go to your happy place. I was talking to a woman who was reading the book on EMDR, Getting Past Your Past. And in that book, it says, identify your favorite, your absolutely favorite pastime. Maybe it's petting your puppy. Maybe it's skiing. Maybe it's going for long walks in nature. Maybe it's rocking your grandchild or your baby. And imagine yourself doing that and really identify the five senses. If you were holding your daughter, what would she smell like? What kind of baby lotion would you smell? What would it feel like to rub her head and feel that silky fine hair on the top of her soft, shiny head? And what would it feel like to feel your hands engaged, holding this small infant? So you got feeling, you've got smell, you've got touch, you've got What is her cocooning sound like? What's it like when she's really in a good place and she's just happy and, you know, she's sucking on your finger or she's making precious little noises? What is that like? And when you can put yourself in that happy place and really access all five senses. I didn't talk about taste because I didn't know what it tastes like to kiss a baby's forehead. But when you can access all five of those senses, you calm down the parasympathetic nervous system. Your heart rate goes down. Your muscles expand. And you do a better job of taking care of you. I have to admit, for my listening audience, it looks like my guest isn't coming on. And so I always want to share this show with somebody else. I just think it's more interactive and it's better dialogue. And I think my heart was racing a little bit. And just imagining holding a small child and accessing those five senses calmed me right down. So be thinking about what your happy place is. And the next time that you feel triggered, I want you to imagine being there, centering and grounding yourself, accessing all five of those senses, and really allowing yourself an opportunity to lean into your own intentional self-care. That makes all the difference in the world. And there is not any of us as partner specialists, partner coaches, clinicians, there's not any of us who don't believe in teaching the skill of centering and resourcing to our clients. Because that is at the heart of two really important things. That's at the heart of A, reducing the anxiety, and B, preventing it from being as prevalent in our lives. I mean, they have done exercise after exercise, and we know that to be true, that that is the most instrumental exercise on slowing the body down. The other two exercises that are have been measurably helpful in working with anxiety and fear and worry are progressive relaxation, which is when you lay in a comfortable position on the floor, in your bed, in a reclining chair, and you squeeze your muscle parts and then release. And you start with your feet. You flex your feet, 2, 3, 4, and then you relax, 2, 3, and 4. You do it again, 2, 3, and 4, and relax, 2, 3, and 4. And then you tighten your calves, 2, 3, and 4, and relax, 2, 3, and 4. You do it again, 2, 3, and 4, and relax, 2, 3, and 4. And this progressive relaxation then goes to your thighs, to your abdomen, to your shoulders, to your biceps, to your forearms. And when you go through that circuit twice, it again has the power to relax you, as well as to reduce the anxiety. Reduce it and prevent it. You know, when we practice mindfulness exercises, we're more likely to be triggered less. What's that sound like? We're more likely to be triggered less. How about if I say, you will reduce the frequency of triggers. Now, lastly, the other measurable exercise that really makes a difference in anxiety is deep breathing with visualization. And that's when you take 5 deep breaths, and when you breathe in slowly, you breathe in the color that represents serenity. And when you breathe out, you exhale the color that represents stress. You do it 5 times. Some people do it before they get up in the morning. Some people do it before they fall asleep. Some people, during a tough work day, head off to the bathroom and do it in the stall. You know, it matters not when you do it, but the more you do it, again, that's deep breathing with visualization, the more likely you are to be in control of your central nervous system, your anxiety. And we all know that oftentimes feelings create thoughts, which create feelings. Now, sometimes thoughts create feelings and create thoughts. But we really do want to practice simple exercises so that we can manage our emotions better. Because dysregulation is a part of this partner trauma. And that's what I know to be true. And I just gave you a simple exercise. And I so thank you for, you know, being available. And I'm hoping some of you were in a place where you actually could do a little bit of it. And for others who might be driving in the car, I hope you didn't. Okay, I'm a CSAT. I'm a certified sexual addictions therapist, and I'm an APSATS. I'm a partner-sensitive trained therapist. And we know that it's important to guide you through the struggle. And so what I'm hoping for you is that your triggers are becoming less. You're building some self-confidence. You're detaching with love. And you're managing your own affairs a little bit better now that you're out of the trauma. But if you aren't, I want you to go to APSATS.org. Look for a trained specialist in your area. And I want you to get the help you deserve. And next week, we are going to have another expert on that has been instrumental in helping partners all over the globe. We are going to have Rebecca Hogg on, and she has made it her mission to help clients to find the services that they need. You know, so many of us are coaches and clinicians that are referral sources. And, you know, I do that all the time. People will hear the show and they'll email me at carolthecoach.com, and they'll say, hey, where do I find a book on mindfulness? Hey, my husband, I believe, just had one affair. Is that sexual addiction? You know, and we'll talk about getting with a therapist to determine that and reading a book on infidelity and seeing if that fits versus sexual addiction. So we want to be your resource. We want you to find safety in an unsafe situation. Because that's what Abscess is all about. And as I say at the end of every show, there really will be one of you at all times. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. We'll see you next week for more Betrayal Recovery Radio.
For more information, go to abscess.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.